From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with him? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Ali Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner by Annette Bird, closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning. And once again, welcome to the show that launched this network. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, extending a very special welcome to everyone tuning in throughout HRN Nation. You're doing that in North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. And if you're one of those individuals joining us from more than 147 countries around the world, welcome to the program. You're listening through our free live streaming at horseracingradio.net, or maybe you're tuned into the podcast archive of this show. Happy to have you along for the next couple of hours as I come to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios on what promises to be another very busy program, and a program that you have, believe it or not, very little Kentucky Derby conversation here on this Saturday morning. But of course, that doesn't mean I can't let you know that we are now just 112 days, 9 hours, 47 minutes, and wait for it, 41 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 2nd, beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs. So breeding season is fast approaching, and most of the breeding sheds are going to open right around Valentine's Day. That's kind of the traditional opening time frame of most of the breeding sheds. Stallions at Pin Oak Stud and Versailles, Alternation and Broken Vow, are once again coming off big, big years in 2019. And I'm going to be joined by Clifford Berry, who is the longtime manager at Pin Oak, right around 8:15 Eastern after our first commercial break. He'll help kick off this program. That's in our Stallion Spotlight segment, which is presented by Red Brand Fence. And I kind of get the feeling that Clifford might have a bone to pick with me based on my Eclipse Award ballots that I discussed on this show last weekend. So we'll find out, 8:15 Eastern. The Eclipse Awards are fast approaching, January 23rd at Gulfstream Park. And one of the media categories that is going to receive an Eclipse Award, and always does, is the category titled Feature and Commentary Writing. Joe Neville, who is now the bloodstock editor of the Pollock Report, is going to be awarded that Eclipse Award this year for a piece that he wrote, which is fantastic, obviously fantastic. It won an Eclipse Award, but it's titled Biting the Dust, A Long Goodbye to Mount Pleasant Meadows. And it was published and put out there on Pollock Report July 22nd of this past year. Joe's going to be with me at 8:35 Eastern time to talk about his motivation for writing that piece. And it, Mount Pleasant Meadows, if you're not aware, is in Michigan, or was in Michigan. It's a racetrack that is now closed, and it strikes a chord with all of us who are racing fans, first and foremost, and have had a local racetrack close that we used to frequent, that we fell in love with. And he writes it from that perspective. It's really cool. I won't steal his thunder, but going to talk to Joe Neville's coming up at 8:35 Eastern. I think you'll really enjoy that segment. I also think you're going to enjoy the start of hour number two, which kicks off with 16-year-old jockey Charlie Marquez, the son of veteran rider Carlos Marquez Jr., who, of course, has won more than 3,100 races in his career. Charlie is also the grandson of Carlos Marquez Sr., who was also a successful jockey. He taught at Puerto Rico's famed jockey school. And Charlie Marquez won his first race at Laurel this past Thursday. 16 years old. You see the picture of him on Blood Horse and various websites, industry websites. And here's this kid, braces and all, huge smile on his face, as he should. It's a great story. It's a very positive story. And I'm going to talk to Charlie coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time. So stay tuned for that visit. Sam Houston began their 2020 race meet last night down in the heart of Texas, Houston, Texas. Frank Hoff, the Senior Director of Communications, will be with me at 9:20 Eastern to talk about their opening weekend and preview what's coming up at Sam Houston throughout the course of their meet. Of course, you'll hear our Industry Star of the Week, which is presented by Stuart Morris, and our Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift. That also comes your way in the second half of the program. Poll question for the day is, and you can weigh in, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way to cast your opinion and answer this question. And it's not even a poll question. It's more of a question of the day. If you could spend a full day visiting with one person in racing, past or present, we'll make it past or present, who would it be? If you could spend a full day visiting with one person in racing, past or present, who would it be? And the inspiration for this question comes from this past week's Trainer Talk show, which you can access now on our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network at Apple Podcasts. Scott Acker joined me on the program this past week for the full hour. And toward the end of the program, I happened to ask Scott that very same question. And his answer is one that I can imagine a lot of young up-and-coming trainers might give. But his reasoning was interesting. He said if he could spend a full day visiting with one person in racing, for him, it would be Dwayne Lucas. And that's easy. Everybody would like to spend a day shadowing and talking and picking the brain of a guy like Dwayne Lucas. He's brilliant. But then I asked him, okay, Scott, what would you ask? If you had one question that you could ask Wayne, what would it be? And he paused, and I thought this was very interesting. He said, I'd like to know, teach me how to lose well. How do you lose well? How do you handle the losing as a trainer and keep your head high? And I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was a really well thought out question too on the part of Scott. Think about it. As he pointed out, you win 25% of the time as a trainer in this sport. You're doing pretty darn good. You're probably on the path to the Hall of Fame, depending on what races you're winning. But it also means you're losing, failing 75% of the time. And he wanted to ask Wayne, he would ask Wayne, how do you handle the losing? How do you keep your head held high? Keep the faith in what you're doing, in your operation, in your program, when you lose 75% of the time. It's the same thing in Major League Baseball. I've talked about that on the show before. A Major League Baseball hitter that hits .333 for his career is a Hall of Famer. But he failed 66% of the time he went to the plate. But he's in the Hall of Fame. So how do you maintain your faith in your program and handle the losing? That was a great question from Scott. You can hear the entire one-hour interview with him. He's a young, up-and-coming trainer. He's only won one race so far, but that's the first of many, no doubt. You can head over to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast. So a very busy program. Don't forget that question of the day, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you could spend a full day visiting with one person in racing, past or present, who would it be? And I'm going to read some of those answers later in the program, second half of the show. So Clifford Berry comes up in just a couple of minutes. He'll kick it off for me. Joe Nevels will be here, Charlie Marquez, and Frank Hoff, the Senior Director of Communications at Sam Houston, also going to be here later in the program. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
2019 champion General Sire Into Mischief, Spendthrift's first since Seattle Slough.
Coming down to the line, and Covfefe does it!
2019 champion Second Crop Sire Golden Sense, Into Mischief's best son and one of only eight sophomore sires ever to top $5.5 million in progeny earnings.
And they're running away! Mr. Money by Five!
One serious sire line in the making. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Alternation endorsement, Mission Impossible, Nero on the outside. Alternation endorsement, Nero charging. Here's the wire photo finish, and it's a photo alternation.
Here comes Eskimo Kisses, Chocolate Martini, and Metro Morrow. Chocolate Martini has won the Fairgrounds Oaks, a 16th to go, and Alternation is unbeatable here at Oaklawn, and he stamps himself as a legitimate top horse in the country.
Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
Yeah, been a pretty good year for the Stallions out at Pin Oak Stud in Versailles, Alternation and Broken Vow. Serengeti Empress, the daughter of Pin Oak Stallion Alternation, a winner of the Kentucky Oaks earlier last season, and one of the finalists in the category of 3-year-old filly champion when the Eclipse Awards will be handed out on January 23rd. And joining me now is Clifford Berry, the longtime manager at Pin Oak. He is with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Clifford, first and foremost, Happy New Year and good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike, and happy New Year to you too. So glad to hear Serengeti Empress get a big plug this morning from you. So.
Well, I said at the top of the show, I kind of had a feeling you might have a bone to pick with me after I revealed on this program last week my choices, my top three finalists in the three-year-old filly category, and I did not have Serengeti Empress in the top three, but I was wrong because she made the top three list. She's a finalist.
Well, I'm proud that you admitted you were wrong, Mike. That's a step in the right direction right there.
You know, look, I mean, her campaign last year was really, really good. Seven starts, two wins, 2 seconds, a third. I think she earned $1.2 million last year. She's tough, Clifford.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Look, Tom Amos and his crew have done a fabulous job. And in this day and age of, you know, shorter careers, I thought he did a marvelous job from, you know, the Rachel Alexander to the Oaks to finishing third in the Distaff. And, I mean, she never missed a dance all year, short or long. I thought one of her most impressive performances was maybe even at Saratoga in the test. I mean, I thought that was just the race of the meet, probably, to be honest with you, Mike, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she was a half a length off of Covfefe that day and ran a bang-up race. And you look at what she did that afternoon, I can remember, you know, sitting there watching that race live and to see the fractions, 22 flat, 44 and 1, 108 flat, and Clifford, yeah. She was the one setting the pace that day.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, they were just, I mean, sitting watching, you're thinking there's no way she's going to hang around at the end of this.
Yep.
And to still be there at the wire in those fractions was pretty amazing. Because there's no, I mean, you look at her pedigree, you look at the way she's bred, I mean, sprinting doesn't look like exactly as what she wants to do, but I think she's just such a game, hard-knocking filly, you know, Tom Amos just done a marvelous, marvelous job campaigning her from start to finish last year. And I was glad to see her get in the top three as a finalist for the three-year-olds. And it's a tough group of fillies for sure, but I think she deserves some serious recognition in there. So
yeah, a very deserving finalist, no doubt about it. And we'll get a chance to see if she takes home the hardware again on January 23rd. At Gulfstream Park. Clifford, you mentioned the fact that she danced every dance, and she showed a lot of tenacity in so many of her races. Do you find that that's a common trait with a lot of the alternations that we see out there?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think he was like that himself. I mean, he was a good two-year-old. He was a good three-year-old. That was maybe kind of, he had some early issues as midway through his three-year-old year, which he didn't kind of get to finish out his three-year-old year, but he came back at four and proved what a good, good horse he was. And he just really turned into a very solid sire for us here. And, you know, for Miss Abercrombie and for Pinnock, it's pretty exciting to see a filly like Serengeti Empress jump up in early in his career. And just says a lot for the breeders supporting him. And it's, you know, just an exciting time for us even right now. And very, very proud of the horse that he has a finalist for the Eclipse Awards here so early in his career. I mean, that's, as you know, Mike, there's nothing easy here in the Kentucky market as far as stallions are concerned, and it takes those kind of marquee horses to keep you on breeders' minds 24/7. So.
Yeah, it takes the marquee horses. It also takes a stallion getting off to a quick start, and Alternation did that in 2017 with his first crop two-year-olds. They came out running, and that has to help a little bit too, doesn't it, Clifford?
Yeah, it does. I mean, the breeders want to see that early precocity. I mean, that's part of what everybody's looking to make sure they can get off to a good start. And, you know, being the son of Distorted Humor, that was never really probably in doubt from our end of it, just because he ran himself as a two-year-old. But I'm sure the way he's bred and people were thinking, well, he's going to come a little later. And sure enough, I mean, they have come later. I mean, they are kind of two-turn dirt horses, a traditional American dirt horse is what seems like he's wanting to produce. And, you know, that's where the big money is in the afternoons, is that two-turn on the dirt, so...
When you get a horse like Serengeti Empress and she jumps up and wins a race like the Kentucky Oaks and then runs extremely well throughout the rest of her campaign, do you start to see an uptick in the number of phone calls and the number of breeders reaching out to you at Pin Oak saying, hey, let me come over and take a look at this Alternation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, once they do that, they get into a whole different sphere of a different type of breeders and people looking to race and people, you know, commercially looking to go to the marketplace. I mean, you know, that first and second year, as we all know, it's easy fill these horses and, you know, people are filling them on the comb. But then kind of breeders will sit back in years three and four and wait to see what's going to come down the pipeline as far as runners are concerned. And you can't blame breeders for doing that. And then once they show up and have an afternoon horse like Serengeti Empress, that gives breeders a lot of confidence to move forward. And you know, he's obviously out, you know, Serengeti Empress is out of a Bernardini mare, and it's quite surprising that inbreeding the Siaka Slough has worked quite well with him, to be honest. And I hope it continues to work, because we bred a lot of mares last year based on that, to be honest. So
yeah.
I hope breeders are correct, because if it is, we've got a lot to look forward to in the future. So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up, because it leads me into my next question. And Pin Oak has had a long and storied history. You went through this with Broken Vow, where you were able to develop him, and now he's, you know, one of the, when people look back on Broken Vow, they're going to say, yeah, he was one of the top stallions that we've seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Now you're in a position with Alternation where he's gotten off to the quick start. What's the challenge now from your side of things, Clifford, as a breeding operation, to keep him going, to keep breeders interested? Is it all up to the offspring on the racetrack, or can you do something about that?
Well, I think you know this horse here was something that we've done differently probably than even Broken Vow. I mean, we syndicated this Alternation coming when he arrived to stud, and I think that's was a big change for us rather than going alone on a stallion. I think the marketplace has proved now you've kind of got to get a different group of breeders in with you that'll hang in with you and breed some nice mares to them. And those breeders have been very loyal to them. I mean, we syndicated half the horse at the time, and we're kind of pretty excited to go forward with that group of breeders. And it makes a big difference in the long term that they'll sit there and support the horse and believe in the horse. I mean, that's the commercial market. It's kind of like a one-and-done type of deal right now for most people standing these stallions. So I mean, it's important to take that group of breeders and move forward and have some confidence in the horse. And look, at the end of the day, they've got to come with runners on a Saturday afternoon, and fillies like Serengeti Empress and Alternative Slough and Limation and those kind of horses are what keeps breeders coming back year in, year out.
Visiting with Clifford Berry from Pin Oak Stud in our Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Clifford, let's talk about my man Broken Vow, because he is just incredible. The son of Unbridled continues year in and year out to produce top runners and Saturday afternoon horses. How does he continue doing it?
You know, Mark, I don't. He's a remarkable horse. I mean,
he is.
From a family that's been very, very good to Miss Arcombe over the years. And, you know, when he arrived to stud, son of Unbridled out of a Nijinsky mare, you knew they were going to take a little bit of time. But he's remarkable. And I think maybe over 75 stakes winners to date, 12 stake horses last year, horses like Imprism, Fan the Man, you know, the horse Tone Broke, the one two legs of the Canadian Triple Crown up there. No, they're just, he was a runner himself. I mean, he was, you know, when Graham Motion had him, I mean, Graham always bragged about, you know, he could have, I think he won his maiden going 7/8 at Gulfstream first time out in like 21 and change. So he always possessed a lot of speed, and he's just been an amazing sire. I mean, year in, year out, short, long, dirt, turf, I mean, they're just Saturday afternoon race horses is what they are. And the amazing thing and the most exciting thing now, he's really stepping up to be a very, very nice broodmare sire, which is pretty exciting. So,
yeah, that's what gets me excited about Broken Vow. You look at the broodmare side of things and what he's going to accomplish, and that'll be part of his legacy too when things are all said and done. But the fact that he does produce horses that run short, long, turf, dirt, it really doesn't matter. Does that give you more options, Clifford, when you're talking to potential breeders that have a mare and they're looking at Broken Vow, that you can say, well, look, this all worked and it produced this type of horse? Does that give you some more options?
Absolutely. It opens up a lot of doors for them, for sure. You know what I mean? And that's what breeders are looking for. I mean, they want some different opportunities, and he'll definitely do that for you. I mean, they're just sound, genuine, very good-minded horses that just want to hang around for a while, for sure. I mean, they're just not two or three stars and gone by the wayside, you know. Not to discredit any sire line or anything, but definitely that sire line can be a little hit and miss as far as racing careers go on some of their offspring. But I mean, he has absolutely booked that trend for sure. So, and I think it's a model going back into his female line. I mean, you can look back from Wedding Vow to Wedding Picture to Strike a Balance. I mean, just that whole family that Miss Abercrombie has developed is just sound race horses, and that's something that is Miss Abercrombie's philosophy. I mean, she's, as you know, Mike, it's all about racing for her, and it has been for 50 plus years. So it's not about just one or two races. It's all about a consistent pattern of a racing career. So,
you know, when we talk about different sports teams, we often talk about some of the great teams being the ones that have consistency, and that's a word you just mentioned, and ones that don't have a lot of change at the top, and they can weather the storm through some of the down years because of their philosophy. You mentioned the consistency there at Pin Oak, Clifford. What's it been like for you being there for so long and being associated with somebody like Mrs. Abercrombie, who is so good in the sport? She'll leave a legacy behind her for sure. What's that been like for you?
You know, there's days you pinch yourself when you wake up that you've landed in such a spot, to be honest with you. You know, I came here, Mike, in 30-plus years ago just to do a breeding season for Mrs. Abercrombie. And, you know, at that time, the farm was under the care of Joe Osborne. And, you know, luckily enough that, you know, kind of Joe had taken me under his wing. And, you know, when Joe returned to Ireland, you know, I jumped at the opportunity when Mrs. Abercrombie offered me a job to take over. And she's just been a guiding light for me personally over that length of time, but it's always been about the horse for her. It's never, you know, it's day in, day out, take care of the horse and the horse will take care of us, you know. And she's obviously been through the highs and lows of the game and probably handles the lows better than I do, but just been an amazing opportunity for me and my family. And I mean, look at for everybody around and the staff here at the farm. I mean, we've got people here, Mike, that have been here 30, 40 years, which is, that'll just tell you in itself, you know, what kind of a family that Miss Abercrombie has put together, what group of people that she's put together here, and just an amazing lady to work for, really.
Yeah, there's no doubt that's on my bucket list for 2020. You and I have talked about this over the past couple of years, but at some point, Clifford, I want to come out there and sit down and visit with her and put together a nice interview that people can listen to, because I think her philosophy, her approach, and her commitment to racing really needs to be heard on a national level. So at some point we'll put that together, but it's on my bucket list for 2020.
Yeah, no, she'd be glad to do that. I mean, just, you know, it's all about consistency for her and taking care of the animal. There's no doubt about it. I mean, even over the 30 years, there's very little has changed in her philosophy of taking care of them and how to get a racehorse to the afternoons. And then it's the same, you know, we've got a great group of trainers that, you know, from Donnie Van Hemel has been with us 30 years, and Graham Motion's probably been 25, and Mike Stidham has been 20. And in this day and age, that is pretty remarkable in itself, to be honest. You know, that you keep those kind of relationships. And those kind of relationships have benefited us when you're making these mares and doing all about families. And you just learn to a lot more about the families than maybe sometimes you want to know, I'll be honest. So, it's a great, when you sit down to do your meetings, to have that kind of input from those guys every day. So,
when is she going to give me permission to deer hunt out there on the farm?
If I did that, I'd probably be looking for a new job.
Those are like her pets, aren't they?
Yeah, we've got a pretty good crop of them going out here right now, let me tell you. So,
not only do they produce top racehorses, they produce some pretty nice deer out there at Pin Oak too. And I probably shouldn't have said that publicly, because now we'll have people trying to get out there. You have to fight them off with a stick. But
but it's just, look at it. It's Miss Abercrombie. It's about the land. It's about the wildlife. I mean, you can drive through the gates here and just see that.
It's beautiful.
Very, very evident for her. I mean, it's she's just been a great caretaker of the property here over the years. So.
Well, Clifford, listen, I appreciate the visit here this morning. You're always gracious whenever I ask you to join me here on the program, and continued success there at Pin Oak. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and we'll encourage people to head over to the Pin Oak website to learn more about the stallions. That's pinoakstud.com, and we'll look forward to seeing you up the road here soon, Clifford.
All right, Mike, thank you very much, and I appreciate all you guys do for racing, and I know you're vote is going now for the three-year-old fillies.
So. It's all about Serengeti Empress now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, buddy. Clifford Berry here on HRRN. Yeah, what a fantastic operation. Fantastic. I can't wait. I am so excited. I am going to do that. 2020. Clifford and I have talked about this now for 2 years. I'm going to sit down at Pin Oak and have a visit with Mrs. Abercrombie and put that out there for you so you can hear it, because it her story is remarkable. Her backstory, everything she's been through, everything she's done in her life is incredible. And everything she's done for racing, as you just heard Clifford mention, she is one of the stalwarts when it comes to thoroughbred racing and the breeding and the racing side of things. And I'm going to do that. I can't wait to do that for you here in 2020. That interview is going to come your way at some point here this year. I promise you that. Joe Nevels, the Bloodstock editor with the Pollock Report, is coming up next. He, of course, is now an Eclipse Award winner by virtue of his article that he wrote that appeared on the Pollock Report in the middle of last year. And I'll talk to Joe when I come back. But first, it is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington, the Godfather Tony Antiano, all the great people. They want to be the dealership of the equine industry in Central Kentucky, and they've been doing it for a very, very long time. It's the Lexus Store of Lexington, and this is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The thoroughbred being profiled herein was unreservedly classified as a true superstar, both on the racetrack and in the breeding shed, until he went his way to the big paddock in the sky, so to speak, at the age of 27. His death came at Alfred G. Vanderbilt's Sagamore Farm in Glendon, Maryland in 1958. He was the son of Ariadne, out of display by Light Brigade, was foaled in 1931 and raced for 4 seasons for A.G. Vanderbilt. He started 63 times, won 27, had 10 seconds and 10 thirds. That's 47 out of 63 in the money. He earned $195,000-plus during his lifetime on the track, and that was an awful lot of money in the 1930s. He was a renowned carrier of high weight, and as a result of that ability, earned the nickname of the Big Train while still racing. That was a highly favorable moniker indeed, if one but considers that the immortal Walter Johnson of Baseball Hall of Fame carried the same nickname. This Muirworth farm bred had quite a remarkable racing record indeed. In 33 starts at the ages of 4 and 5, his average impost carried was 131 pounds. He won 10 of his composite total of 27, weighted at 130 or over, 2 with 131, 3 packing 132, 2 with 135, 1 with 136, and 1 race with an imposing 139 pounds on his back. There's not a single thoroughbred racing in this country today that even remotely be considered capable of that ability, not one. In his career on the track, he won the Brooklyn Handicap 3 times, the Rhode Island, Maryland, Butler, San Carlos, Stars and Stripes, Bunker Hill, Arlington, Cincinnati, Murchison Citizens, Kenner, and the Whitney 3 times, the Wilson 2 times, the Detroit Challenge Cup, and Hawthorne Gold Cup, among many others. John Salvatore Harvey wrote of him, quote, "He was called upon to do things no other thoroughbred had ever attempted, and if he did not uniformly succeed, his success was such that the voices of detraction should be silent in the presence of a performer so transcendent," end of quote. He was retired to stud for the 1937 season at Sagamore and continued for many years most successfully in that role at that farm. He was a sire of Fine, the outstanding distance horse who indeed took after his father in many stakes winners, including Loser Weeper, New Moon, Traffic Court, Conniver, Knockdown, Miss Disco, Too Timely, Femme Fatale, First Glance, Dispose, New World, Dark Discovery, Lord Calvert, Newsbeat, Columbus Kitchen Police, First Serve, Sometime Thing, Bonar, Coveted, and Foreign Affair. What an array of glittering stars of the turf. His greatest fame at stud came via his production of superb daughters. Vanderbilt often stated a very simple breeding rule, quote, "Breed a mare by this great horse to anything," end of quote. Among his outstanding producing distappers were Geisha, Dam of Native Dancer, and Miss Disco, Dam of the Quintessentially Brilliant Bold Ruler. Both Geisha and Bold Ruler were horses of the year. They also sired the dams of Hasty Road, Grover B., Better Roses, and Traffic Judge. Both Mr. Vanderbilt, his owner, and Ralph Kirchable, who was the Sagamore farm manager for many years, vowed there never was another horse like this one, who was affectionately nicknamed Pops. So fond were they both of this grand old campaigner that they bid farewell to him before the day of his demise from progressively poor health, which was on August 28, 1958. Neither wanted to be around when he was put to sleep to mercifully spare him from any undue suffering. He was buried in the farm cemetery next to the only other horse buried there, the superb mare Bed of Roses. This great thoroughbred, who left an indelible mark in capital letters on the now yellowed pages of both racetrack history and stud records, was the brilliant Discovery, a true legend of the turf.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
The official winner of today's ninth race, that's the 2B horse, Sussex Place, owned by Gary Kislewski, trained by Donald Evans, and ridden to victory today by Mike Holmes. Holmes notching 4 wins on the card.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Broadcast Studios. And that little clip you just heard, I know the audio quality maybe wasn't the greatest, but that's the way things sounded. Sounded better if you were there, but that's the way things sounded years ago at Mount Pleasant Meadows in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Of course, that racetrack is now closed, and that little clip came from a piece that our next guest, Joe Nevels, put together when he was working with the Daily Racing Form back in 2013. And Joe is now, of course, with the Pollock Report. He's the bloodstock editor for the Pollock Report. And earlier this summer, Joe put together a piece titled Biting the Dust, A Long Goodbye to Mount Pleasant Meadows. And you can go back and Google it. It's on the Pollock Report now. It was published on July 22nd of last year. And That is now an Eclipse Award-winning feature, and congratulations to Joe Nevels for that honor. Joe, good morning, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
Glad to be here. Man, where did you find that clip? That's a throwback.
I started Googling. I wanted to come up with something to welcome you to the program, something Mount Pleasant Meadows related, and I started Googling race calls at Mount Pleasant Meadows, and that was the only piece that I could find. And I'm thankful that you put that together all those years ago.
Yeah, that was Scott Cerniak, who I actually wrote about in the story that won the Eclipse Award. The man did everything. He was the announcer. He was the bartender. He bought programs from him, marketing director, janitor. He'd even punch your tickets on a slow day. And assistant racing secretary. He had to do everything there.
Yeah, I said this at the top of the show. The piece, the article that you wrote was so good. It struck a chord for me personally, and I think it did for so many racing fans that have ever fallen in love with a racetrack that is no longer there. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, was that kind of the crux and the inspiration for you putting this together?
Yeah, it's something that, the story honestly took me probably about 5 years to put together from first thoughts to hitting send on it, just because, I knew that I wanted to write something about Mount Pleasant Meadows when it closed, because, the demand for writing about horses, the demand for writing about horse racing in Michigan is so low that it's, if someone's going to do something wrong, it's pretty much got to be me. And I knew that I was only going to get one shot at this, and I needed to make it count. So it's something that I've been trying to piece together for a long, long time, and, get the right people to talk to, get the people that I associated with most with the track, who are the three people I talked to for the story, and, try to stick the landing, because I was only going to get one shot at this thing.
Michigan racetracks have been closing for a very long time, and you're a Michigan native. Why was Mount Pleasant Meadows the one that was so personal for you?
Well, there are two reasons. One is it was the closest track to me. I grew up in a town called Edmore, Michigan, about 35 minutes from Mount Pleasant. So usually the thoroughbred outposts were either in Detroit or the Detroit area, or in Muskegon, which is on the coast of Lake Michigan. So this was kind of my local option. If I just wanted to go play the simulcast or, just go watch live racing without having to take up most of my day, Mount Pleasant Meadows was my option. And, the other one was that it was just a very accepting community. It's where my grandpa taught me to, read the races and learn the races. And, it was small enough that you got to know everybody because you had to, because, I used to have a joke on Twitter that I could go around and high five everyone on the track grounds if I hit a good ticket. And so you had to figure out who everybody was. You got to know everybody. And that's something that stuck with me for years after the track was closed.
When you stand there and you look out at what is the old Mount Pleasant Meadows location, what are some of the things that immediately hit you?
I mean, you think about some of the people and horses that were out there competing. Mount Pleasant was a place where, there weren't a whole lot of professional jockeys, professional trainers, in the sense that this was their job and this was their ways to make a living. A lot of them were a lot of the jockeys were factory workers, or they worked as mechanics, or had, concrete businesses, what have you. A lot of the trainers, this was something that, they ran their horses on the weekends here, and if they had a good one, they'd go to Pinnacle Race Course or Great Lakes Downs and try it there. But like, this was, this was the base for them. So I think of those people, and it was, such a small core. The same jockeys are, the same group of 8-10 jockeys are riding every race. The same group of, 20 or so trainers are sending every horse through everything. So I think of that, and I think of the sounds. You played the clip of Scott announcing the races earlier. I think of all the different announcers that they had. I think of, very specific people in the crowd yelling, because, you get into a crowd, people have very distinctive voices, especially when they're being very loud, and you think of, I think that's the certain jockey's wife, and that's the, certain fan who just lost her, lost a bet or something. And just, you think of the sights and sounds, and, for me, I think of the smells. There's something that I wrote about in the story, how, the track had a very particular smell when it was going. I believe I said it was plastic seats in the sun, cigarettes in the open air, and the stuff you'd find under a trainer's boot. And it's just, it's something very particular to the track that I always associated with it. Whether it was actually a good smell or not is to be determined, but I knew where I was when I was there. And that was something that, You know, it's association. You know that I'm at a place I like and things are going to be all right.
There are a few individuals that you spend time talking with in this article, and trainer Nate Funnell is one. Jockey Lee Gates is another. Now, many people, when I say those names, are not going to have any clue who we're talking about. So tell me a little bit more about those guys.
So Nate Funnell, he was born in Colorado, moved to Michigan when he was a teen, and he came up under a trainer named Tony Cunningham, who is a quarter horse trainer who's actually gone on to do very well in Indiana. I think he's been a meet leading trainer there several times. And he went out on his own in the last few years of the track and did pretty well for himself, both in the quarter horses and thoroughbreds and Arabians. Mount Pleasant had races for all sorts of different breeds. They also ran paints there, too. And, you know, Nate was just a very, I don't know, he was a life of the party kind of guy. When, you know, you go over to the track simulcast, you have the bar in there as well. He'd always be at the bar, you know, cracking wise with people, making jokes. And just kind of, you know, he'd be the loudest voice in the room, and, you know, he'd do the same out on the racetrack. He's the one that I would always associate with being somebody who would almost be like a wrestling villain to the crowd and just sort of like, you know, jaw-jacking with people, you know, like, oh, we got the horse that's going to beat the favorite right here. I've got the Ozzy. There's a horse named Ozzy. You can do it. He'd always say, oh, I've got the Ozzy killer right here. And, you know, he was a big character. He was a big character at a small track, and that really stood out. For Lee Gates, Lee rode for his parents primarily, Dave and Shirley Gates. They rode his parents would run on the fair circuit before Mount Pleasant Meadows opened, and Lee had a rider's build, so he was the one that got thrown up on the horses when he was, you know, in his teens, and that just sort of became his thing after that. He spent the weeks working at a factory nearby, and the entire family lives on basically the same stretch of road around Blanchard, Michigan, and would ride up on the weekends. Something that's kind of interesting about the Mount Pleasant riding contingent is that the races would go very quickly on Saturdays and Sundays. They'd start at 1 and they'd be done by about 4. So everybody would ride their cards there, and then a group of them would get in a car together and drive down to Indiana Downs, which is a good 5-hour drive at least from Mount Pleasant. And they would ride the quarter horse card there because it would always be the last 2 or 3 races on a night card. So they'd leave Mount Pleasant at about 4. Drive down to Indiana Downs and ride the quarter horse races there at, you know, what, 10 o'clock at night, then turn around and come back and ride the Sunday races at Mount Pleasant. So, you know, these aren't people who made their living doing this, but it was a hard living doing it to do it all as they needed to.
Talking with Eclipse Award winner Joe Nevels from the Pollock Report here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, that has a pretty nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It's something that I'm still kind of freaking out about, but I'm really glad that I've got that title there. It's really exciting.
All right, let me ask you this question. So, yes. Of course, as you know, HRN won the Eclipse Award in the audio multimedia internet category this year. We were given 30 seconds to record an acceptance speech. Did you keep it to 30 seconds?
I still haven't shot mine yet. Judy Hieronymus with Keeneland is the person putting that all together, and we're going to shoot it during the January sale. I'm going to be out there anyway. I covered, you know, I'm the bloodstock editor for the Pollock Report, so I'm definitely going to be out to the sale. So I think we're going to knock that out during the sale.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's a challenge. If you can do it, I'll be impressed.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're hearing how wordy I am with everything just over this conversation. This is going to take some serious editing.
I'm a radio guy. I talk for a living. I have to talk for 2 hours every Saturday morning. I had to cut it down to 30 seconds.
Oh, boy. Okay, this is good to know. This is, you know, this is how we learn things. This is how we prepare. So I appreciate the insight on that.
How'd you receive the news that you won the Eclipse Award?
So Jim Gluckson with the Breeders' Cup called me on the morning of Christmas Eve and told me, you know, I'd won, congratulations, gave me all the information on, you know, what we need to put the press release together and everything. And at the end of it, he said, and you can't tell anyone besides basically your immediate family and your boss. So I have this fantastic news, something that I've been working for basically since I knew what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I couldn't tell anybody. I called my mom, of course. I called, you know, I called Ray. You know, I told my wife, my mother-in-law. I was staying in Virginia, and we were all very excited. And then that was kind of all I could do until it was a day or two after Christmas. So I had to sit on this for a while. So I've got all of this pent up like jubilation and nothing to do with it. I went outside and had one of the best runs that I've ever had. I just found the energy to keep going, and I slept like a very sore baby that night afterward.
Wow, that's completely different than my experience. I promise you, I didn't run a step after I got the news. I didn't even think about going for a run.
Well,
you're a better man than Joe Neville.
Everybody celebrates this in different ways.
You know, outside of that tremendous honor, and let's face it, the Eclipse Award is a phenomenal, humbling honor. What else, when you think back on this article and everything you were able to accomplish in telling the story, what are you most proud of?
I mean, a lot of it's just the fact that I was able to get it out there in the first place. I mean, this is a 6,000-word story about a track in the middle of nowhere that's been closed for 5+ years that really very few people in the greater racing scope remember besides me. So I got to give a lot of props to Ray for, you know, basically running it to shut me up and, you know, letting me go with it in the first place, because he very easily could have told me nobody wants to read this and, you know, write it, you know, post it on your blog or something. But he didn't. He let me run it, and he let me run it with, you know, a lot of pictures that I'd taken of the track over the years, and I think that really helped drive some things home. And, you know, I'm just very fortunate that, you know, I've had the opportunity to get it out there in the first place.
Yeah, not only are you a Michigan native, Joe, but you attended Central Michigan, so you are a Chippewa. That is the home also of Antonio Brown, NFL wide receiver, or former NFL wide receiver. He just sent a tweet. He's not happy you left him out of the article.
Well, that's, I mean, it's really, I've been spending, we were actually, I never saw him while I was there, but we were at CMU at the same time, and I've spent the last decade chasing his shadow when it comes to being the most famous CMU graduate. You know, I'd like to think that I've gained a little traction on him on this, but I'm not feeling too bad about him if he's feeling shaded here. I think he's got me beat by a wide margin.
Yeah, you got to start doing some musical stuff. You got to start rapping or something.
Well, that mixtape's going to be dropping in June 2020, just as a heads up. So, you know, yeah, you can have me back on for that.
Yeah, you got 30 seconds to plug it at the Eclipse Awards, so
exactly.
Sneak that in there too.
Well, I mean, Eclipse Awards is the same weekend as Pegasus. Maybe I'll show up on stage with Nelly or something.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'm looking forward to seeing you down there, buddy. And congratulations again. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Joe Neville's, ladies and gentlemen. Joe, appreciate the visit.
Hey, always a pleasure.
All right, buddy. Yeah, Bloodstock editor of the Pollock Report. You want to go back and read that article. It's well worth it. It is Biting the Dust, A Long Goodbye to Mount Pleasant Meadows. And again, July 22nd, 2019. It's still out there on the Pollock Report, so you can go back and read it. You know that the passion that you hear in Joe's voice, and I say that it strikes a chord with everybody in this sport who has at one time said goodbye to a racetrack that they fell in love with. Now, I grew up, as many people know, about an hour or so from Saratoga. That's my home track. That's where I cut my teeth. But I also lived in Nashua, New Hampshire for a time. And when I lived in Nashua, Rockingham Park was running. And I can remember going to Rockingham. I can remember a horse by the name of Mr. Sneak-a-Snack winning a race at Rockingham. Go back and look him up. I just thought it was a cool name, and when I was growing up, I thought that was a cool horse that I would follow. But then Rockingham closed, and I can remember that it felt like a gut punch when I heard that Rockingham was going to close. They were going to bulldoze it, and what is it now? It's a mall or a parking lot or something, and that's a shame. That's a shame. It was one of the true gems of thoroughbred racing. But that piece that Joe put together, just fantastic. Go back and do yourself a favor and read that piece. All right, going to come back, get you set for hour number two. It's a busy second half of the program. Tell you all about it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. From the Totniarcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and has already sired 3 first crop stakes winners and 2 additional stakes place 2-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in 3 starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Cara Conti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
1500 on here. Done. Thank you very much. In the back, $850,000. Woody, thank you.
2019 was certainly a banner year for Darley's Grade 1 Met Mile winner and first-year sire, Frosted. His $850,000 yearling at Saratoga was the top price for any freshman last year. Frosted is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Frosted, a multiple Grade 1 winning son of champion sire Tappet, Frosted earned more than $3.1 million and is a graded stakes winner in both the United States and Dubai. His 14.5 length win in the Grade 1 Met Mile was the largest margin in the history of the prestigious race and resulted in a new stakes record of 132.73. Learn more about Frosted and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com, and now you can find more tweets of great feats on Darley's new Twitter account. So follow at Darley America today.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And there's a quarter of a mile left to go. Trophy Chaser, Let Go by Lionel Reyes, and 2.5 on top. From the outside, it's Mijos. From between horses, Garter and Tie. Then it's Code of Honor. Final eighth of a mile, Trophy Chaser trying to get home. Mijos going to try to nail him on the money. This is going to get close as Mijos starts to get some ground. Here's Mijos. Mijos is in time. Mijos ran down Trophy Chaser to win the Mucho Macho Man. Garter and Tie was third. Code of Honor disappoints at 4-5 and settles for fourth in 137-2.
That's Pete Aiello with the call of the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream last weekend. Chance it with a game victory for our man Saffy Joseph Jr., the native of Barbados, who was with me on this program talking about Chance It before the race. What a day for Saffy, too. Multiple wins on the card, multiple stakes wins, and sent up a congratulatory text after Chance It won and after he capped off his big day. And he told me that I could interview him anytime I would like if he's going to have days like that. So we'll see if we can get Saffy back on the program at some point here in the near future. But congrats to him. Will Chance It be among Bobby Newman's top five in this week's Calling All Three-Year-Old segments presented by Spendthrift Farm? Well, you have to wait till the end of the second half of the program to find out about, we'll have that for you coming up right around 9:40 Eastern time this morning. Question of the day, you can weigh in on our Twitter feed and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, is if you could spend a full day visiting with one person in racing, past or present, who would it be? And we've received quite a few answers already. Keep them coming, because at the end of the program, I'm going to pass along as many as I possibly can and share your thoughts here on HRN. So at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, to let me know your thoughts on the question of the day. Don't forget to download the special Blood Horse Best of 2019 tablet-only issue with the top feature stories and photographs in Blood Horse Magazine for the year. This special issue is available to anyone with a tablet free of charge. Just download the Blood Horse Magazine app
and then the best of 2009 tablet issue, all compliments of Blood Horse. Yeah, and of course, you can get all your news at bloodhorse.com. All right, second half of the show coming up, it kicks off with 16-year-old jockey Charlie Marquez. Charlie just won his first race on Thursday at Laurel, and going to get a chance to visit with him. He's the son of journeyman jockey Carlos Marquez Jr. and the grandson of Carlos Marquez Sr., who was a successful jockey and taught at Puerto Rico's jockey school. We'll talk to him coming up 9 o'clock Eastern time in just a couple of minutes. Frank Hoff is the senior director of communications with Sam Houston. They kicked off their 2020 meet last evening. I'll talk to Frank at 9:20 Eastern, and he'll fill you in on everything you can expect from opening weekend, and he'll look ahead to the rest of the meet and some of the big days coming up at Sam Houston. Of course, calling all three-year-olds our industry star of the week. That's all ahead in the second half of the program as well. I'll kick it off next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One will never forget. Looked impossible.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, on the cottage door.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. A very busy Saturday morning, the 11th day of January 2020. Happy to have you back with me on Sirius 219, XM 201, on affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Clifford Berry from Pin Oak Stud or Eclipse Award winner Joe Neville from the Pollock Report, all you have to do is head back over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can listen to all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Well, second half of the program, I told you, features the young phenom, I will call him, the young up-and-comer, 16-year-old jockey, Charlie Marquez. He's going to kick it off for us in just a minute. He won his first race at Laurel this past Thursday. It was a great moment for him. And this is the way it sounded. Race 2, Laurel, on Thursday.
Top of the stretch. Music Maker's the one to catch. Nana Shoes is two lengths behind in second. Out the center of the track is Floating By, trying to quicken up. And Sierra Leona, about a quarter of a mile left to run. Music Maker went 6 furlongs, a minute 13.97. Nana Shoes trying to get by. Floating By on the far outside. Floating By. One of the Banjos has come off there. Floating By. But on the inside is Sierra Leona. Sierra Leona's got the kick with Charlie Marquez. A 16th of a mile left to go. Sierra Leona floating by. Banana. And on the inside, here's the line. Sierra Leona, Charlie Marquez with his first win. Floating By second.
Dave Rodman with the call at Laurel. Again, this past Thursday. And Charlie Marquez aboard for the winning ride on Sierra Leona. And Charlie is with me now. Charlie, first of all, congratulations, my friend.
Sorry, what did you say?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, what a moment, huh?
Yeah, it was crazy, that's for sure.
All right, so when you listen back to that race call here just a minute ago, what goes through your mind?
I just get chills. I mean, it was just a goal of mine for my whole life. It's something I've always wanted to do. And I achieved that goal at such a young age, and it's such a I can't really explain it. It's just such a blessing to me.
All right, let's walk through the day. You had ridden in races prior, But of course, this being your first win, take me through the build up to the race. You wake up, you start going, getting ready to go to the track. What's going through your mind? Could you sleep the night before? Are there butterflies? What's the deal?
Well, the very first day I rode on January 1st, I was very nervous. I mean, I didn't sleep the night before. You know, it's just butterflies everywhere. I just wanted to do this my whole life. But leading up to that race, I worked that horse. She worked great. I knew we had a shot, so I was pretty confident in her. I woke up, did the normal, got all my exercise gear and headed to the track, worked horses, you know, get ready for the races that day.
All right, we'll talk more about that win in a second, but take me back to that first start then on January 1st. You go into the gate for the first time. Some butterflies there?
My first race, that was really fun. I rode for Jose Corrales. He helped me a lot when I first started at the track, galloping horses. He put me on a whole bunch of horses. So it was good. I was happy to ride my very first race for him. I galloped that horse 2 days before, and I was very excited to ride that horse. I think we finished fifth or sixth in that race, but he gave me a lot of experience for my very first race.
All right, let's focus on the winning ride then on Sierra Leona. Take me through that trip.
Mr. Phil Schoenthal told me to send him up there and keep her up there. So we broke sharp, and I sat right off of the number two horse. I can't remember the name, sorry. We sat right off. Coming around the turn, I tried to swing right wide, but there was no hole. So I took it down the rail, and she gave me her everything, and she just ran her heart out, and we got there.
You know, I've interviewed so many jockeys over the years on this program and other shows, and you talk about wanting to go wide, but there was no hole, so you had to make the decision to come up the rail. It proved to be the winning move. Charlie, how much time did you have to make that decision in real time during the race?
Not much time. I had a horse on my outside, and I had a horse on my inside, and I wanted to come out a little bit, just one pass. Just that's all I needed was one pass to get clear, but I wasn't able to get out, so I made the last-second decision. I pulled to the inside and made a hole and went through the rail.
And I can assume that being a young kid trying to win your first race, there's no gimmies out there. Those other riders in the race aren't going to give you a hole by any stretch of the imagination, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm competing with some of the best riders in Maryland. I mean, it's some of it's hard, but I enjoy it. I don't want anyone to go easy on me just because I'm 16.
All right, so you come up the rail and you realize, well, I guess at what point did you realize you're actually going to win the darn thing?
Well, I knew I had a lot of horse at the top of the lane when she switched leads. And she just dug in. I went left-handed, and she gave me a whole another gear, and we got up there, and I just was hand-riding, rode as hard as I could because I knew we had a shot to win that race.
I remember Mike Smith telling me once that when he won his first Kentucky Derby, he said, you hear the roar of the crowd coming down the stretch, but then there's this moment of silence. And he said it was hard to describe, but there's a moment of silence when you cross the finish line, and then it's just this explosion of crowd noise. What was that like for you? Was it the same thing?
I mean, I can't even tell you what I was hearing. I was just riding. You know, all you can hear is the feet of the horses. But yeah, once I crossed that wire, it was just unbelievable. I couldn't it was a lot to swallow.
Talking with 16-year-old jockey Charlie Marquez, coming off his first career victory, no doubt the first of many more to come. What happens in the jocks room after a jockey wins his first race, Charlie?
Everyone gathers around and they all throw water on you with soap and eggs or whatever. It's just a tradition that all jockeys have when they win their first race. But I enjoyed it. It was freezing cold that day, and the water was freezing, but it was all worth it in the end.
In the article after the race, you mentioned that you couldn't have done any of this without the support of your mom. So tell me about that relationship and why she was so important in getting you to this point in your career.
Me and my mom are very close. She gallops horses in the morning. She works with the vet. She used to pony. She does everything with horses. She taught me everything I know about horse racing, just horses in general, you know, whether it's horse showing or jumping or whatever. She taught me everything I know. She has a horse named Mass Strike that I think I mentioned. I rode a couple races with him, and, I mean, he taught me everything I know about horses, you know, their leads, you know, pace, everything. I rode him in races over jumps and on the flat. So
yeah,
goes to those two.
How do you get a horse to change leads during a race, Charlie?
Change leads? Is that
what
you said?
Yeah, how do you do it?
You just shift your weight going into a turn. I usually go straight for a stride and then just lean and turn, and they usually switch. Some horses just do it automatically, you know. They know what they're doing. They know their job. Some are a little stubborn, you know. You have to make them do it, but they usually do it.
You come from a racing family. Your dad, Carlos Jr., has won more than 3,100 races. He's now riding down at Camarero. Your grandfather, Carlos Sr., a successful jockey. He taught at Puerto Rico's jockey school. Do you ever go back and pick their brain or watch tape and try to emulate some of the things that they did to be successful?
Yeah, of course. My dad is a great off-the-pace rider. I couldn't pull up any of my grandfather's races, but, my dad is a really good rider. I watch him a lot, and I try to do the tactics that he uses coming off the pace and that kind of stuff.
Is that difficult to get a horse to relax in a race, or is it pretty simple?
Sorry, what did you say?
Charlie, yeah, no problem. I said, is it difficult? You mentioned coming off the pace. Is it difficult to get a horse to relax in a race, or does it depend on the horse?
It's really about the rider. You can make any horse relax.
Well, I think we just made Charlie relax. We might have dropped the call with him. We'll try to get him back on the line here for just a minute or two for you before we get to our next commercial break. But fun stuff. You can tell, great kid, tons of enthusiasm, tons of passion for the sport. Coming from that racing family, learning from his mother, as he talked about. One thing I do want to ask him, if we can get him back on the line, I want to ask him about his education. I mean, he's 16 years old. And should still be in school, and I want to ask him about that. Do you pursue a riding career now that he's won a race, or is he going to spend time focusing more on his education? So Charlie is back with us now. Charlie, sorry for the drop out there. What's it going to be? Are you going to try and pursue more riding opportunities, or are you going to focus more on the education?
Right now, bug year, I'm worried about horse racing. I'm always going to be doing schoolwork at home after the races. But my first priority, I think, is going to be horse racing. You know, it's my career, something I've always wanted to do for my whole entire life. I have the chance, so why not take it, you know? I'm not going to drop out of school. I'm going to continue to do my work and do it at home just in case anything happens because, you know, horse racing is a very dangerous sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you even think about that, though, at 16 years old, about the dangers, or you can't let that enter into your mind?
They run through my mind sometimes, but when you think about all that, you shouldn't be riding. I ride racehorses because I like it. It's a rush. I love racehorses. I mean, I do it for the fun, you know, for all the people that are involved. Yes, there's dangers, but I think it's all worth it.
Yeah, he's Charlie Marquez, who is my special guest here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, winning his first race this past Thursday at Laurel. Charlie, I'm going to sound like an old man now. Stay in school. You got plenty of time to ride races, man.
Sorry, what'd you say?
I said, I'm going to sound like an old man now. Stay in school. Get the education. You got plenty of time to ride races.
How fun is it to ride races?
No, no. No, I said stay in school. You got plenty of time to ride races, man. Get the education first.
Yeah, but I'm a 10-pound bug, and, you know, I don't know if you see me, but I'm kind of tall. So I'm worried about my weight a little bit, but I think I can manage. But yeah, I'm always going to be in school. Homeschool is key. I could probably graduate by June if I get all my work done. So that's, I'm not really too worried about it.
Yeah.
I think everything is going to sort itself out.
Good for you, brother. Well, listen, safe trip every time you get a leg up, and keep it rolling. And congratulations on that big win, Charlie. Because of that win,
thank you so much.
You're going to be our industry star of the week on the show this week. And this segment is all presented by our friend Stuart Morris. So, Charlie, congrats on that. Congrats on the win. And good luck and safe trip moving forward.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Charlie Marquez here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and again, our industry star of the week. That segment presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you, and he knows it. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. Great kid. I know we had some issues with the phone connectivity there, and he was having a difficult time hearing me. But, yeah, I mean, you see the pictures of him and smiling ear to ear with the braces, and you can tell. I mean, 16 years old, and to be living his dream. And it sounds to me, and I was kidding with him when I was giving him a hard time about staying in school, but, obviously you got to get the education. 16 years old, he'll have plenty of time to ride races. He's got to get the education, but it sounds like he's got a good head on his shoulders. Sounds like he's working in that direction. We'll cheer for him. Charlie Marquez, our industry star of the week here on HRRN. All right, Sam Houston began their 2020 race meet last night down in Houston, Texas. When I come back, I'm going to visit with Frank Hoff, who is the Senior Director of Communications with Sam Houston. And then our Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift, comes up after that. And I'll pass along the results of the question of the day. So many of you chiming in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you could spend a full day visiting with one person in racing, past or present, who would it be? I want to hear from you. Let me know, and I'll pass along those answers coming up at the end of the show. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include multiple stakes winner and grade 3 victor Recruiting Ready, multiple stakes winner and graded stakes performer Taylor Spirit, and juvenile stakes winner South Bend. In the Pennsylvania Derby, Algorithms notched his first grade 1 winner with a thrilling victory by Matt Wizard. In the ring, his juvenile sold up to $275,000 this year. Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hi, I'm Kieran McLaughlin. I'm so hot at this meet because I listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And here comes Midnight Bisou, but Heaven Has My Nikki has kicked, and Heaven Has My Nikki is still with a neck in front. Moonlit Garden with an eighth to go. Midnight Bisou's now bearing down on the outside. Heaven Has My Nikki, Moonlit Garden. But here comes Midnight Bisou with a late push. And Midnight Bisou shines brightly in the Houston Ladies Classic. Moonlit Garden a game second. Heaven Has My Nikki and Remedy finish fourth in 1 minute 44.52 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Midnight Bisou, a huge win to begin her campaign in 2019. That came in Houston, Texas, in the Houston Ladies Classic at Sam Houston. And, of course, Midnight Bisou, maybe the front runner for the champion older female in thoroughbred racing when those awards are given out at the Eclipse Awards at Gulfstream Park coming up on January 23rd. Of course, Sam Houston began their 2020 meet last evening and joined now by Frank Hoff, who is the Senior Director of Communications at Sam Houston. Frank, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Look, I'm going to just put this out there. So a bigger event this weekend, opening weekend at Sam Houston or the Houston Texans?
You know, I've been a season ticket holder at for the Texans since the beginning, but obviously opening weekend at Sam Houston Race Park is far more special to me than the big playoff game tomorrow.
Yeah, what a way to kick it off. Last night things got going, and then a big weekend and more great things to come. Fill me in on what folks can expect over the course of the next several weeks at Sam Houston.
Well, obviously, we started off last night. The participation from the horsemen has been wonderful. Full fields. The first 3 days of entries, we've had about 300 horses enter. So tonight's card is going to be another stellar night of full fields. Wednesday's card, it looks just as good as we've had this weekend. And even entries for Friday, next Friday, again, we're looking at 9-10 horse field average. And, you know, as the season continues, we're just hoping to move with large fields, you know, have good post times, good wagering opportunities for the players. And, you know, it's going to turn out great. You know, stake program coming up with the Houston Racing Festival at the end of the month, and a lot of good things that we hope to continue to build on.
Yeah, when you talk about the wagering side of things, Frank, I think it's important to point out the low takeout that horse players can take advantage of at Sam Houston throughout the meet.
Yes, I mean, obviously we started years ago with the 12% takeout on the pick three, and a few years ago we were examining our wagering format and, you know, thought it as an opportunity for us to lower all the multi-legs down to 12%. The Houston High Five, you know, is a kind of a newer wager at the time. So to just kind of generate some interest on that, we, you know, said, let's just go 12% on that. And, you know, as the time goes, you know, we move forward, you know, the next season, you know, we'll look at the other wagers that we have and just see what opportunities there is to look to reduce those as well. So continuing to just try to make things better for the players. You know, certainly understand, you know, takeout is becoming more and more of a conversation. So, you know, we want to be on the front end on improving what we offer at Sam Houston.
Yeah, the purse structure also rock solid down there in Houston, Texas. You guys have done a tremendous job putting together top purses, which attract top horses. We just heard the call of Midnight Bisou, who was as good as they get in 2019, kicking off her campaign at your racetrack last year. So much of that has to do with the increase in purses, right?
Yeah, we certainly, you know, last year was, you know, with the ladies classic, you know, having Midnight Bisou come was a wonderful opportunity to, for us. And then looking at 2020 with legislation that passed around June of 2019 here in Texas, certainly given us the opportunity to improve purses. And obviously that has certainly attracted a lot more horsemen. We've got, you know, applications were very strong headed into the season. And we are just, you know, we're thrilled, and we really want to look to put into the overnights. You know, we certainly did some things for the Texas Bred Stakes program. We added the Texas Turf Mile on the Racing Festival Day for three-year-olds. But really the focus was to build out the overnights because that's the bread and butter for us. So, and with that, you know, it's so far it's paying off.
Yeah, and it's not just Midnight Bisou when you talk about the Ladies Classic. You look back at the horses that have not only competed there but won that race in recent years, and you know, names like Unbridled Mo and even Forever Unbridled in 2016, another huge name that came through Houston, Texas on way to what was a tremendous campaign for her.
Yes, I mean, really, it does go back to Forever Unbridled coming and winning, and then what she did, you know, that the rest of that year and eventually the next season. So that race has really become a nice race for Phillies and Mares to start their campaigns and move on to the, you know, how they're going to structure their season. So we're pleased with that. I think it fits the schedule nicely. So we're happy with that, where that's gone, and the Conley. And we hope to continue to grow and make everything, you know, make everything better.
Visiting with Frank Hoff, the Senior Director of Communications at Sam Houston on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Frank, talk about the impact that racing at Sam Houston has, not just on the landscape of racing in Texas, but on the local community there in Houston.
Yeah, so with the additional purse money and what we're trying to do here in Texas, you know, it's you know, we've always wanted to have the opportunity to showcase Sam Houston Race Park. It's been a while. And so being the first one to have the increased purses and some of the other changes that we've made, it we've got a lot of support from the horsemen here in Texas, and hopefully that will continue to grow with the breeding and, you know, just having more race dates and more opportunities for racing down here in Texas. You know, the city of Houston's been great, supporting us, you know, through the years, and, you know, obviously, with these more, you know, with the more excitement of the racing, and, you know, we hope that that'll just continue to grow. It's certainly, Houston's a big city with a lot of things to do. So we certainly appreciate all our customers that come out for live racing or simulcasting.
What's the biggest challenge that you face in trying to grow the product at Sam Houston year in and year out?
The biggest issue we always had was just the purse structure. You know, we don't have, you know, going into this season, we didn't have any other opportunities for additional funding. So it was just basically coming from simulcast wagering and live racing. And obviously, when we go to a 32-day race meet, it certainly makes it challenging to kind of grow purses from there. And so that was always the biggest challenge. We knew we had the track surfaces. We knew we had a good operation. But obviously, you know, money talks, and, you know, running nickel claimers for $6,000 it's tough to attract, you know, a lot of horsemen to come to run with you in, you know, in the wintertime. So it's always, we're happy that we got this opportunity, and hopefully we can grow on it and, you know, get stronger through the years.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it's moving in the right direction. When you talk to people about Sam Houston, and whether it's people that you're talking about maybe wagering remotely from another part of the country, or people that are looking to come to Sam Houston for a visit and see the track for the first time, What do you say to them? How do you describe it to them, Frank?
I think the biggest thing that we tried to tell our customers that may not play us is that, you know, from a handicapping standpoint, we've got, you know, those surfaces are great. You know, they play fair. You know, for people that come to the track for the first time, you know, I think a lot of people are just impressed about the size of just how big racetracks can be. The grandstands, they, you know, I show people around all the time and just impressed with how just what a racetrack looks like on, you know, from the building and, you know, take them out to the barn area or walking the track. It's impressive. So, you know, we really just try to encourage, you know, new players or people to come visit the track, not just at Houston, but any other track in the country. And, you know, just what it takes to put on a day of racing is quite impressive. And, you know, trying to show that is, you know, important, I think, to continue to grow the sport.
Yeah, going to be a special weekend at Sam Houston. And, again, opening weekend taking place. Well, they opened last night, so opening weekend all weekend long now. And then the huge day on January 26th with the Houston Racing Festival, over $1 million in purses and a couple of grade threes there. You have the John B. Connolly Turf. You have the grade three Houston Ladies Classic. Both of those races always attract solid fields and so many other race nights that people will want to keep an eye on as they move throughout the program. So before I let you go, Frank, just hit some of the highlights outside of the Houston Racing Festival. What are some of the other events that people will want to have on their calendar?
So, it's in addition to the Racing Festival, in February, we added a new kind of a preview day for Texas Bred Racing. It will be on February 22nd. It will be the Texas Preview Day. So these will be kind of prep races for the Texas Champions Day races that will be on March 22nd. So we'll have four races on that day for Texas Breds, and then obviously Texas Champions Day, which will be on March 22nd. That will feature seven races. We added one more this year. And again, just trying to help build the Texas breeding program back up and get back to where it was, you know, many years ago. So we're looking forward to it. We got those big days for thoroughbred racing, and you know, again, everything's be, and big focus back on the overnights and the everyday racing.
Yeah, we'll encourage people to head over to the Sam Houston website. That's shrp.com. And by the way, Frank, I love the new slogan for this year too: Major League Racing, Major League Cash, Major League Fun. It all adds up at Sam Houston.
That's the goal, and we're certainly looking forward to it. And yeah, it actually, the slogan works pretty good this year.
Yeah, it does. Well, good luck to your Houston Texans. Would be great to see them pull off the victory on the road this weekend.
We'll see if they can do it twice this year, but we'll be rooting for them tomorrow.
Were you at the game last weekend?
No, I actually was not. I was just getting ready for racing, so had to pass those tickets off to somebody else.
Yeah, all right. He is Frank Hoff, the Senior Director of Communications at Sam Houston, with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Frank, thanks for all your support of what we do on the network, and look forward to a great meet coming up here at Sam Houston. I'm sure we'll visit again before the meet's over. Which you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Yeah, they are doing a great job down there. And that industry low takeout, think about that, 12% takeout on multi-leg wagers, which include their Space City Pick 6 is what they call it, and the Houston High 5. Great incentive if you're betting on the races at Sam Houston, whether you're there on site or you're betting remotely from somewhere else in the country through your ADW. Make sure you take a look at Sam Houston. They're really working hard and doing things the right way down there in Houston, Texas. SHRP.com is where you can learn more. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, it's time for Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift, and some final thoughts from me before we wrap things up. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gio Ponti, a three-time Eclipse Award winner.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his grade one collection.
Champion older male.
The champion, Gio Ponti, to take the Shadwell Turf Mile for Ramon Dominguez.
And two-time champion male turf horse with career earnings over $6 million.
Final 16th of the Shadwell Turf Mile, Gio Ponti, Wise Dan, charging after Get Stormy. Gio Ponti from the outside. How about that? Gio Ponti will go back to the winner's circle.
In 2019, Gio Ponti is the sire of 10 stakes horses and 7 stakes winners from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, including Grade 2 winner America's Tale, Grade 3 winner Gucci Factor, and stakes winners Long Runner, Dubini, Giovanna Blues, and Olympic Runner. In addition, Gio Ponti has produced champion sprinter and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong and $1 million Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. Gio Ponti, standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Join us this Saturday at Santa Anita for world-class racing and much more as older fillies and mares compete in both the Grade 2 $200,000 La Cañada and in the Grade 3 La Cienega Stakes. We've also got $1,000 in daily prize value offered in our $40 handicapping contest, with the top two finishers earning free entry into the next $500 handicapping challenge. First post time on Saturday and Sunday is at 12:30, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Adena Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adena. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award Championship.
And Shaman Ghost takes the Queen's Plate!
At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile!
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Adena Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the Conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's all authentic as they pass the quarter pole and turn for home. Authentic in complete command, turning it on. He's in front by 6 with a furlong left to go. Zimba Warrior and Azul Coast, as Authentic is putting on a show here. He's a little green, shifting about, but long gone. Authentic strolls home in the sham. He'll win by about 8 lengths. Azul Coast completes the exacta, then Zimba Warrior and Taishan.
Nobody has been better in the history of the sham stakes than Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. Authentic became his record 7th winner in the race over the years, and boy, he has been really good, and Authentic was pretty good. You heard Frank Miramati with the call. Got a little bit green there in the stretch, but he's still learning. That was his first start as a 3-year-old, and we'll hear more from Authentic up the road, the son of Into Mischief, looking pretty good in taking the Sham Stakes last weekend. But would he find his way into Bobby Newman's top 5 in this week's Calling All 3-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift? We'll find out.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All 3-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Hi, this is Bobby Newman with this week's edition of Calling All 3-Year-Olds presented by Spendthrift Farm. Two big prep races on the road to the Kentucky Derby last weekend, starting at Santa Anita, the Grade 3 Sham Stakes, and the winner was the favorite Authentic for trainer Bob Baffert. This son of Into Mischief went wire to wire, winning by almost 8 lengths, and that was despite reacting badly to the crowd noise once he got into the stretch at Santa Anita, veered in sharply, almost hit the rail, then veered out to the center of the track. Really all the jockey Drayden Van Dyke could do to stay aboard this talented 3-year-old, but he was good enough to win, and he garnered 10
very valuable points on the road to the Kentucky Derby in doing so. Then on the East Coast, the Mucho Macho Man Stakes at Gulfstream Park marked the return of Chancet, who we hadn't seen since September in the Florida Sire Stakes. He was sent off the 3-5 favorite, a ding-dong battle with As Seen on TV all the way down the stretch. And when the wire came, Chancet getting his head down in time. There was some bumping in the stretch. There was a claim of foul, but no change, and Chancet gets the win. We should see him next, either February 2nd in the Holy Bull or February 29th in the Fountain of Youth. Well, no big stakes races on tap this weekend for the three-year-olds, but an interesting race to watch later today at the fairgrounds. Their ninth race is for three-year-olds. They're Louisiana-bred three-year-olds going 6 furlongs on the main track. It marks the return of No Parole. He broke his maiden. He did it with authority, winning by 14 lengths in mid-December at the fairgrounds with a win today, and he's 3-5 on the morning line. We could see him in a major prep for the Kentucky Derby in his next start. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
2019 champion General Sire Into Mischief, Spendthrift's first since Seattle Slough.
Coming down to the line, and Cole Feffi does it!
2019 champion Second Crop Sire Golden Sense, Into Mischief's best son and one of only 8 sophomore sires ever to top $5.5 million in progeny earnings.
And they're running away! Mr. Money by 5!
One serious sire line in the making. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Independence Hall, currently in training at Tampa Bay Downs, maybe next time out in the Sam F. Davis on February 8th. Number two is Maxfield, injured just before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, should resume training shortly in Florida. 3,000 words set to go in either the Robert F. Lewis or the San Felipe for his next start. Number four, Dennis's Moment, prepping in Florida for his next try, February 29th in the Fountain of Youth. And new to the list is number five, Authentic. We should see him next March 7th in the San Felipe at Santa Anita or March 14th in the Rebel at Oaklawn Park. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Well, Authentic did indeed make his way into Bobby's top five, cracking the top five this week after that big win in the Sham Stakes. And just in case you're wondering, if you're just joining us and you missed this at the top of the show, edging ever closer to the first Saturday in May and the Run for the Roses, now just 112 days, 8 hours, 8 minutes, and 37 seconds until that outstanding Run for the Roses beneath the Twin Spires over in Louisville, and can't wait. Can you tell them a little bit excited? We'll be there all week long as your exclusive radio home of the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. The only place you'll hear it on radio is with us here on HRRN in partnership with our friends at Westwood One and NBC Sports Radio. So make sure you're locked into all that coverage during Derby Week. But plenty of things to get to before then, including the Pegasus World Cup, which comes up here on the network on January 25th, will be live from Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida, to bring you live coverage, exclusive radio coverage of that event. And you'll make sure you want to tune into that as it's all presented by Red Brand Fence and the FTBOA. So a few things. I threw out the poll question at the top of the show, which I'm going to read those responses coming up here in just a minute. We've received several responses. It was not really a poll question, but a question of the day, and it was pretty simple. You can still weigh in. I'll still pass along your responses if you get them in the next couple of minutes. If you could spend a day visiting with one person in racing, past or present, who would it be? And I told you where the poll question came from. It was inspired by the interview I had with trainer Scott Acker on my trainer talk show this past Wednesday night. I asked him that question toward the end of the show, and for him, as a young trainer just getting started with his career, he said he would love to sit down and spend a day with Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas. And who wouldn't? And then I asked him, what question, if he could ask Wayne one question, what would it be? And he paused for a minute and he said, I think it would be, how do I lose well? How do I handle the losing and keep my head high? And I thought that was a really interesting and well-thought-out question from Scott. Because I told you, and he pointed this out too, as a trainer in this sport, if you win 25% of the time, 25% of your starters, you're doing pretty good. You're probably on the path to the Hall of Fame, depending on which races you win. That also means you're losing 75% of the time. You're failing 75% of the time. Much like a Major League Baseball hitter who goes out and hits .333 for his career, he's a Hall of Famer. But he failed 66% of the time. How do you handle that? How do you handle the times when you're not successful? And here's a young trainer like Scott Acker thinking ahead and wanting to pick the brain of a Hall of Famer like Dwayne Lucas and say, you know what? That's the question I want to ask him. How do I handle myself? How do I handle my emotions during the times when I'm not winning? The 75% of the time I'm not, and he's hopeful he's going to win 25%. What if he only wins 20% or 15%? Then you're losing more often. How do you keep the faith in your program, in your beliefs, and stick to the task knowing that what you're doing will eventually work? So if you could spend the day, a full day, visiting one person in racing, past or present, who would it be? Several responses I'll get to here in a minute. But some highlights from this past week I want to make sure we recognize. Earlier in the program, you heard my interview with young Charlie Marquez, the 16-year-old jockey who burst onto the scene this past Thursday, winning his very first career race at Laurel Park. So congratulations to Charlie. Because of that win, he was named our industry star of the week here on the program for this Saturday morning. Trainer Hamilton Smith, who has been with us before, he's been on Trainer Talk, he's been on this program, recorded milestone win number 2,000 at Laurel. That took place yesterday, so congratulations to Hamilton. He's done a really good job for a very, very long time, and he's very deserving of that 2,000 win milestone. And I'm going to try and say his name correctly. Forgive me if I'm wrong. Luis Cardenas is what I'm going to go with. That may not be correct. And again, I apologize if it's wrong. But the young jockey joined Charlie Marquez as somebody who won his first career race this past week. He did it yesterday at Aqueduct. Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez tweeting out the video of it. Congratulations to Luis on that one. And a happy birthday to Santa Anita's beloved paddock captain, John Shear, who celebrated his 99th birthday yesterday. Happy birthday to John. Now, John has a very interesting story and probably became best known for throwing himself in front of a loose horse years ago, which he's now credited with saving the life of a young girl because the horse was potentially heading right toward her and would have trampled her. But John didn't think twice. John threw himself in the way. Great story, too. Orphaned as a young boy in London, he was wounded by German artillery in World War II, and he's been employed at Santa Anita since 1961. Loves the sport of thoroughbred racing, loves what he does. And it's great to have somebody like that around the racetrack. The stories he could tell. Maybe that's an interview that comes your way here on the network at some point. Maybe my next trip to Santa Anita, I'll get a chance to sit down and talk with John and let him share his stories. But somebody who is beloved by everyone at Santa Anita. And again, happy 99th birthday to John. All right, so many of you responding to our question of the day here this morning. Let's get to some of those responses. I asked you if you could spend a day visiting with one person, past or present, in thoroughbred racing, who would it be? And Laz Barrera getting a vote, certainly that would be one that would be fun. Penny Chenery. Yeah, how neat would that be to spend the day with Penny Chenery? As we know, we can't do that anymore, but boy, that would be something special. Here's one. Can I split the day? Sean chimes in. He says, can I split the day? In the morning, spend some time with the late Hall of Famer Alan Jerkins to learn about horsemanship. And in the afternoon, Andy Beyer for the handicapping. That's a good one. I like that. Here's one. Voting for a horse. Mind That Bird. It would be fun to spend the day with Mind That Bird. You can do that. I believe is it New Mexico? Is that where he's hanging out now? I might be wrong. Chip Woolley was on the show last year with me talking about Mind That Bird, the 50-1 upsetter of the Kentucky Derby. But yeah, that would be fun. Spend some time with Mind That Bird. John Morrissey getting a vote. Charlie Whittingham getting a couple of votes. No surprise there that Charlie Whittingham would be prominent here. Michelle Pena. The big A, Anthony Stabile, saying he'd like to spend the day with Michelle Pena, my beautiful wife. Big A, I'll try not to be offended by that. Could have said Mike Pena. Nobody wants to spend the day with the big... How come I didn't get a vote in this poll, by the way? That's what I want to know. I didn't get a single vote in this poll. HRN Nation, I'll try not to be offended by any of that. Let's see. Here's a couple more coming in. John Velasquez. Yeah, there you go. I'd like to spend the day with Johnny V. Johnny V, he was on the show a few weeks ago with me, and I told you he was one of the first jockeys I ever met when I went to Gulfstream Park and first started the network. And Johnny took me under his wing, if you will, and showed me around the jocks room, introduced me to so many of the jockeys, and told me the proper way to go about lining up interviews with them. And I'll never forget what he did for me that day. It was back in 2006, I believe, my first trip to Gulfstream Park. So, yeah, be fun to spend the day with Johnny V, one of the true good guys in the sport. Chris McCarron, he was my favorite jockey growing up. Don't tell Mike Smith, my holy bull man. They were kind of like 1 and 1A for me. But, yeah, Chris McCarron getting a vote. Howard Sarton. You remember Howard? Dr. Howard Sarton. He was known as the father of pace handicapping. There's another good vote there. That'd be fun. Elizabeth Dangerfield getting a vote. Let's see. Even though I grew up at Rokeby, it would be Paul Mellon. We'd love to hear stories about some of his favorites and go spend a day at Naira when he would have multiple horses run on the same day. Really good answers. Really well thought out answers, HRN Nation. If you could spend the day with one person, past or present, in racing, who would it be? Chauncey, who handles all of our social media, sending me a message here. Let's see, we have another one coming in. Gene says he'd like to spend the day with Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. Why not? He has the party mentality with the passion for horses. Yeah, I can vouch for that. He has the party mentality. A few too many rums with the two of us over the years. But yeah, Jude Feld would be a great one to spend the day with. Learn a lot from him. Former trainer. Somebody who is one heck of a handicapper. Let's see. The person I would most like to spend the day with from the thoroughbred industry would be owner breeder Willis Sharp Kilmer. And then they even gave the dates that Willis was live, 1868 to 1940. Hopefully a future Hall of Famer. That coming from Bill in DeRuyter, New York. So, Bill, thanks for the email there. Yeah, you can email your responses too, mike@horseracingradio.net, if you want to email the show. You know, a few weeks ago, I guess it was right before Christmas, I threw out the question and asked everybody throughout HRN Nation to let me know where they were listening, where they were tuned into the show, and the responses came in fast. And we had people listening all over North America, and it was really cool to see. That was one of my, the one poll question that was really fun for me. And I've had people ask me how they could let HRN Nation know that they enjoy the program. When I run into fans at racetracks across the country during the year, they say, how can I let people know that we enjoy the program? Well, you can always send me an email. As I said, mike@horseracingradio.net. But I thought this might be cool. How about with all the technology now, with the iPhones and the different smartphones, if you want to record a message about why you like HRN, maybe what your favorite programs are, what you enjoy about the Horse Racing Radio Network, why you love being a part of HRN Nation, if you want to record a voice message on your phone and email it to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, we'll try to get it out there on the air for you. We'll try to make you a radio star. So go ahead and do that. Why do you enjoy listening to HRN programming? What is it about HRN that you love? We want to hear from you. Give back to the fans. We'll make you a radio star. So do that. Record it on your phone, mike@horseracingradio.net. Send it to me, and I'll pass it along to my producer, and we'll see if we can't get that out there for you in some form or fashion coming up very soon. All right. One more break, and I'll come back and tell you what's ahead on the network. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco.
win the Jiper!
World of Trouble takes the Carter!
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
The championship meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park. Come and enjoy the heart-pounding excitement of live thoroughbred horse racing, showcasing some of the best jockeys and horses in the world, all while experiencing the best in VIP hospitality in South Florida. Make sure to book your experience for the Pegasus World Cup 2020 on Saturday, January 25th, blending entertainment, innovation, and thoroughbred horse racing like no other event of its kind. For more information on the championship meet or Pegasus World Cup, visit GulfstreamPark.com. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mo Heyman, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tapping, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti and O'Dor! Cara Conti!
Gainsway stallion Cara Conti, a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4 fifths, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Cara Conti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and has already sired 3 first crop stakes winners and 2 additional stakes placed 2-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in 3 starts in England. And Cara Conti has commercial appeal, with 2-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Cara Conti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgerman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
A few minutes left to wrap up the show. My thanks to all the guests who took time to join me here this morning, including Clifford Berry from Pin Oak Stud, Eclipse Award winner Joe Nevels from the Pollock Report, jockey Charlie Marquez, 16-year-old phenom, was with me at 9 o'clock Eastern, and then Frank Hoff, the Senior Director of Communications at Sam Houston. My thanks to all of them. They're all going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Some other responses coming in during the commercial break, several actually, to our question of the day. Doug O'Neill getting a vote is somebody that Juju Bajan would like to spend the day with. Juju, I'll try not to be offended. Can't believe he didn't mention me. Brittany Erton, also getting a vote here. Let's see. Larry Jones, why not? Trainer Larry Jones would be fun. Bobby Frankel, no longer with us, but he would be great. Charles C. Canty, she was with me on the show a few weeks back. Yeah, she is one that I think you'd have a lot of fun spending the day with, picking her brain, hearing her stories. The Queen, Mary Lou Whitney. Yeah, that would be a special day. Can't believe no one has said it yet, but Lucien Lauren. During Belmont Day in 1973, Steve Haskin, because he could tell stories all day about anyone and everyone who you might want to meet or have met, and he has certainly done that. He's done that on this program many times. He's one of our favorite interviews. So, yeah, keep them coming, HRN Nation. Let me know who you'd like to spend the day with. Coming up here on the network, let's see, we've got Trainer Talk coming up on Wednesday night. Of course, you can tune into Red Brand Radio Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoons with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, and Steve Grabowski. That comes your way 3 to 6 Eastern, Sirius 219, XM 201. And you can stream it all worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton Wednesday night. Thursday night, our BristNet.com call-in show. Friday night, you have the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. And then I'm back with you next Saturday morning with the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence. All coming up to our first race broadcast of the year, January 23rd at Gulfstream with the Pegasus World Cup presented by the FTBOA and Red Brand. Been a fun show. Thanks to everybody for being with me. Thanks to all of our listeners, and thanks to everyone who took the time to weigh in on the question of the day. For my producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, for Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening, and close enough to a new season. What the heck? Go Steelers.